Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to With Insights. I'm your host, Iggy Garcia, streaming live on the World Wide Web, on withinsightsradio.com, on the Blog Talk Radio Network. For the next 60 minutes, we will be learning about With Insights. All our friends on this show have something to share and something to give. So I want you to sit back and relax, fasten your seatbelts, and let's get ready for the ride.
Welcome to With Insights Radio. I'm your host, Iggy Garcia, on the With Insights Radio show. This is our Monday evening 6 p.m. segment. Want to welcome everybody to the show. We got a pretty good show lined up for you tonight. I just wanted to say hi to everybody listening out there. And for those of you who are going to listen to the archives later on, you know, I'm sure you're in for a treat tonight. Got a good friend who I haven't interviewed in a while. Actually, I haven't really spoken to her in quite some time, so I'll bring her on here in a little bit. But I just wanted to share with you a little bit what's going on in my world and Iggy's mind and what's happening around Iggy's neck of the woods. Like everybody else, I mean, I'm pretty sure we're depending on what part of the country you live on, we're kind of falling. We're going into fall. We are into fall, but it feels more like winter around here. Today is actually the first time, I think, that we've had pleasant weather in the last week or so. It feels about 65, 60 degrees. The biggest changes that we're going through right now in my family is that we're actually moving from the house that we've been in for 17 years. I raised my kids here pretty much since they were little guys. And this is probably the only place they really have called home for some time. We lived in some other homes for a long time. This is the longest we've all lived together under one roof. My oldest is 23. My daughter just turned 21. And my youngest, our baby boy, is not really a baby, but he's 18. This is his last year in high school. He's a senior. He does all kinds of performing arts type endeavors. He does musicals, Fall Follies. He's an amazing guy. Yeah, pretty proud of him, what he's been accomplishing here. And now he's doing what all kids, or most kids do, looking for a new college to go to, some type of performing arts college. He really loves dancing and singing. That's his passion. He was a soccer player like his other brother and his sister, but he took the other route. He decided he wanted to be in the performing arts, which has made us pretty happy. I remember when he was a freshman in high school, he played his freshman year, and he was going, "You know, Dad, I love playing soccer, but I don't know if I can handle doing both soccer and performing arts. It's just too much work." And so I said, "You know what, Jeeve, you do what's best for you, and, you know, go what calls you, and with that calling, you know, follow your heart, follow your dreams, your aspirations, and just make sure that you just keep up with your schoolwork and do your very best at whatever you choose to do." And he decided he was going to go down this path. And, you know, it's been a wonderful path. It's been a wonderful journey, you know, watching him, my youngest kid. The reason I'm talking about him is just because he's the one who's, you know, the last one in the house. And he, just seeing his evolution, his growth, and, you know, his feistiness. He's like his mom. I'll blame it on his mom on that one. But, you know, just seeing that, you know, following your goals and your dreams and the things that you want to do. I know a lot of us are kind of in transition and going into different aspects of your life. I talked to Dawn really quick earlier and was kind of telling her a little bit about what was going on. She mentioned the word empty nester. And it's just, you know, it's true. I mean, it's our turn, you know, as adults, as parents raising children to take that plunge. I'm actually a young dad. I'm only 46 years old. I got married fairly young, my wife and I. And, you know, I don't know if I have the energy to raise kids anymore. Like, some of my friends are having kids now. I'm like, wow, my kids are big. But, you know, I'm enjoying fall like everybody. I love wearing the sweaters and, you know, drumming outside and, you know, seeing the beautiful sunsets. And that's probably the biggest thing you get with fall, these beautiful, amazing sunsets. They're just really powerful in the cloud formations. I mean, there'll never be a cloud formation ever exactly the same, a sunset that will ever be the same. And that's what I love about, you know, being in this incarnation, about being in life and being in this moment and, you know, and doing the work that I do and being involved with the people I do. And I've been doing this show for quite some time now. It's been since 2007. My sister and I do the show. Sometimes she pops on and does the show with me. The show started out with me just wanted to have a radio show one day. I remember when I was 15, I wanted to do a show. I wanted to have my own radio show. And I remember going into the ham store where they sold radio equipment and stuff. And I told them, what I want to do. They remember these two white-haired old dudes, chubby dudes, and they laughed at me and laughed and laughed, and I was like, you know, but who knew that the internet was going to evolve in the way it has, and, you know, everybody can have their own radio show now. So I'm happy for Blog Talk and all the things they've done for us and the platform they've created. So it's just another way for me to use my medicine and use my my skills and to be that facilitator to the universe and do the things that I need to do. Now I don't have to write a letter. I can actually email. I can call, and I'm there. So I don't have to go too far. So our work is different now. Our work is in the mode that is evolving with the medicine. We also, as practitioners, shamans, medicine men and women, our job is different now. We're evolving. I'm actually starting a new series called Urban Suburban Shaman. It's the way of shamans and live in the suburban, you know, and the shamans live in the urban settings. There's all types of shamans. Those are our people. There's people who has wants and needs. And that's kind of where my book is, and that's I'm writing this book about this. It's been a calling of mine. I've been putting it off, and now I decided after this movie that I'm going to continue working on it. I'm pretty excited. And I'm going to start, you know, putting the feelers out there and talk to all my shaman friends, my medicine men and women, and different type of holistic practitioners, and just kind of pick their brains a little bit. And this is kind of what we're going to go into the interview process here a little bit with different friends of mine who, you know, do their type of work, their type of medicine. I was asked one time, what is a true shaman? And I mean, that seems to pop up. That seems to be a theme now. And I'm like, I don't know what a true shaman is. There's as many shamans as there is different people and different tastes and different flavors. You know, it's kind of what you're called to and how you are drawn to different people, and different people are drawn to you. There are certain people that I touch, and there's certain people that other shamans can touch, other people can, you know, facilitate for. And there's some people who we can't work. We just don't have the same, the energies don't reside. There's no residence there between us. And that's okay. I have no problem with that. I understand that. That's part of the journey. That's part of the, you know, the spirituality, and that's part of how the universe works. I'm always in amazement of about 7 billion people on this planet living together, and all the things that we are all thinking about at some point simultaneously in bed, and all the different things. I mean, we've created, we've helped co-create, and the Earth Mother has also co-created with us, you know, when we come from her. And this is an amazing time to be in the work that we do. I could imagine if some of the great shamans, the great leaders of the past had the technology that we have, that we take for granted, oh my God, the world would be a different place. Here's an opportunity for us to touch people. I mean, in July we had 500 drummers show up, you know, in one spot. We call it the Gathering of 1,000 Drummers, but we ended up had 500, and that's cool, and that's awesome. And, you know, we gave the proceeds to charity, and we gave canned goods to our local CRC, you know, our community resource center, to feed people who are in need. So, I mean, you know, it's there. So with no further ado, I do want to bring my friend online here. Her name is Dawn Dancing Otter. She's here. She's been on our show before. She's a shaman practitioner like I am. She has her own styles, her own medicines, her own different gifts. And let's see if I can get her through here. I want to welcome Dawn to the show. Welcome to the show, Dawn.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's good to be here. Welcome. How are you?
Yeah, I'm excellent. I'm really excellent.
Nice.
Thanks for having me back. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today, Iggy. It's always a pleasure to connect with you.
Yeah, and I'm sure we're both have had, you know, a little hiatus between communication, almost 4 years, and we were counting up a little bit. So a lot's probably happened between 4 years, between the things that you've learned and the things we've even talked about on a previous show.
It's so true. And, you know, I actually have the download from the last show, and I was listening into it the other day because I knew I was doing this, and it was, first of all, really funny to listen to my own voice. I always find that quite a hysterical experience, but
right.
just in terms of what we shared, it was, I can't believe sort of what's happened in the last 4 years in my own practice, in my own life, and in the world around me. So
right.
It's interesting to listen back and to be in the present and experience the present. So, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, lots changed. You don't have any new kids, do you?
No new kids, no. I just have my two sons still. But
okay, good.
That's good because, you know, my practice and my teaching now is sort of my baby at the moment. But
okay.
Yeah.
And I know you've been on some pretty wonderful trips here. I saw that you went over and you were overseas here recently.
Yeah, I went back to, I was in Bosnia and Serbia recently. Just got back last week, actually. And then, that trip is the second time I've been to the Balkans. I was there in 2009 as well. But this time went to a retreat center just outside of Sarajevo. Last time I was there, I was in Zagreb. In Croatia, yeah.
All right, and for our listeners who have never met you before, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do, who you are, and how they can find you, because you know, a lot of people are going to listen to the show later on when they get home, when they have a moment. So I'll let you take the floor for a moment.
Okay. I have to just preface this by saying it's always interesting talking about myself because I never know truly what you know is the important part of me, because I always want to say I'm a mom. That's my first thing. But
awesome.
For myself, and I'm really, when I say I'm just a person, I don't, it's hard for me to say the word shaman without really reflecting on the people who I feel have earned that title that I've met in my life, and just really feeling full of honor for the ability to share what I'm here to do, because it is a real path of, that has been blazed with honorable people. For myself, if anyone wants to find me, can always look for my website. It's www.dancingotter.ca. And I live in Penticton, BC, Canada. My shamanic practice is it's sort of multifaceted. I came to it as a movement artist and really learned the path through, believe it or not, dancing with Haitian people many years ago, more than 20 years ago. It was sort of my first experience with shamanism in this way, with trance state, you know, was to dance into it. And I've been on this path. I've studied with many great teachers, and among those, Gabrielle Roth, Eva Vigran. I've been to India. I've learned yoga from Sri K. Patabi Joyce. I have studied pranayama while I was in India. And really, when I came to shamanism, it was from deep illness. I was very sick for, it was for almost a year. I was very ill. And my when I came to my teacher, he was first my shaman. He was first my healer. Mm-hmm. And really, he healed me from my sickness and saved my life. And then his practice, being soul retrieval and extraction, that really is what brought that front and center for me, because I could see the results from that experience, because I lived the results from that experience. And ever since then, I have said I'm the living work, because the work lived through me, because it helped me to live. So that's the work that I also share here, as well as the dance and the yoga. I practice soul retrieval extraction work, power animal retrieval, and I also teach that in modules. And I do an apprenticeship program both here, and I have students all over the world. So, yeah, it's exciting. It's an exciting life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm full of joy to share it. Really, for me, when I talk about my work, it sounds like there's a lot to it, but really, to me, it doesn't feel like work. It feels like a very natural unfolding of sharing energy, and just, I'm so grateful. So that's me.
Nice. Yeah, a version of yourself, correct?
Yeah, that's the 10-cent version of myself.
Yeah, that's right. I'm really curious. I'd like to, maybe you could explain how you got your name. I know you said that in the last show, but I don't quite remember personally, so I want to see if you can remind me and bring me back to that point.
So my name, when I was sick, my real illness was driven by overwork, because I had a few addiction problems, one being I had a severe eating disorder, but I also had a severe work ethic where I just felt I couldn't let go of work for a moment because it validated me so much. And really that was the sort of epigenetic factor behind my illness. And when I went to see my shaman for the first time, and I was so ill, he found during the journey that I was connected to otter energy, and I said to him, you know, I'm uncomfortable with that, because what do otters even do? Like, I don't even know what they're good for, you know? That seems really unlikely to me, because I feel really connected to horses, because I truthfully love horses so much. I almost, like, when I was a child, I wanted like a horse family. Like, I wanted to marry a horse and, like,
have
horses. Because I got along with them very well. They were very connected to me. And I thought for sure he was going to tell me that I was horse energy. And of course I wasn't, you know. And when I said to him, you know, I have this problem with being an otter, he looked at me and he said, you know, that's why you're sick. Because you don't know why you're here, and you don't know what you're good for. You don't know what your purpose is. You don't know why play is needed and necessary. You don't know why, and therefore you haven't been yourself for a very, very long time. And that's why you're sick. And really, when he explained that to me, it hit me like right between the eyes and in the heart, because I felt that he was very right about that. I mean, that felt so true to me, that he was right. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what my purpose was. I didn't know what I was good for. And I had lost real connection with my joy. And, you know, when you lose connection with your joy, it's very hard to be authentic as a person. Mm-hmm. I was really just getting through. And, you know, it was time. My body had enough of that. Like, just getting through thing, you know? And that's when I got propelled forward into this sort of the next stage of my work, thankfully, gratefully, although at that time it was very painfully.
Yeah, I hear you.
That basically became my name, Dancing Otter, because I was a dancer and an otter, so.
Yeah, beautiful. I like when you tell that story. I think it was pretty cool.
Thank you.
It's always funny. Yeah.
Yeah, I love how that name came about, really. Like, I love how that came forward. I just never wanted to learn, like, never wanted to forget myself again, you know? I wanted to be reminded even when people just call me by name. But I actually changed my name legally in 2006.
Oh, really?
Like, I was going by Dancing Otter for a really long time, like, off paper, you know, not legally. But then I decided I just wanted to merge all of that, so it became my legal name in 2006. So
you're Don Dancing Otter?
Yeah, on paper.
Oh, that's cool. Sweet. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty neat. Yeah, it's funny how we get different names throughout our lives. I know, since I do a lot of Native American work, it's common for your name to evolve and change as you change yourself.
So
I remember
true.
One of my first names was actually a Roaring Chipmunk. They called it, because there was this little.
Awesome.
Yeah, I still use it from time to time. But I remember one time coming out of my house, and there's a little chipmunk just standing there, and his mouth. He just opened up his mouth, like he just like put his arms up, and just like look, he was like screaming at him, but I could never hear him say anything. And he would do that like almost every day. I kind of figured out he was just hungry. He wanted some more food, but his cheeks were so puffed up because he was like gathering nuts or whatever he was gathering, and I couldn't figure out what he was doing. And I told my Cherokee friend, and he says, you are a roaring chipmunk. And it's funny.
That's awesome. If you were probably the size of a chipmunk, it might, you know, you might be hearing a roar, you know,
yeah,
maybe it's a different pitch.
It was just funny. Then I have another friend who's a chief, and I'm part of their group, and they call me Hoop Watcher. I'm actually a chief in their organization.
Oh, wow.
Hoop Watcher. Hoop Watcher actually means one who walks the medicine wheel, one who walks with the animals. So I'm the Tsipi facilitator, the Sweat Lodge facilitator for all the Nemenha people worldwide. I give the teachings.
Wow.
And I, so pretty cool stuff.
Right on.
So,
wow.
A lot, a lot, a lot of stuff has, you know, I've evolved and changed and progressed and learning, never stop learning. So I'm pretty excited.
It's so
as well.
True. And once you sort of live, once you really live the work, you know, your responsibilities begin to shift and change, and you take on more responsibilities because that's mm-hmm. that's what happens. It's the natural order.
Yep, that is correct. That's true. Now, are you? You see, I was reading on your bio here that you're doing the rehabilitation of raptors. You're still doing that. I think I saw pictures of.
Yeah, I am. That's I love that work. I got involved in doing that work through a friend of mine who she basically volunteered for the organization, just feeding the birds once a week. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, well, I can do that. I can go feed birds once a week. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it at the time how much I was going to love that. Because even though I've always loved animals, my whole life I've always had this deep affection for animals and a deep appreciation. I would just stop everything and, you know, watch a bird fly or, you know, watch a fish in the water or, you know, watch a dog run. You know, like I would just have this mm-hmm. very deep affection. And when I went there, I didn't realize how much I was going to love it until I started to learn how to do more sort of first aid with these birds. When they would come in injured, you know, various things happen to raptors here in the Okanagan because we're getting quite populated all the way mm-hmm. along the valley. And so we're encroaching into the habitat of a lot of these wild birds. And, you know, because we're encroaching on habitat, they're trying to get used to our presence, you know, and a lot of things happen in our expansion of humanity in this place, and including, we, you know, we're widening roads and we're, you know, building more fences and we're putting up new telecommunication wires. And so these birds are, you know, prone to bumping into us or us bumping into them more often than one would like to think. But also with climate change, a lot of the birds are having to change habitat, having to change what they choose to eat. And this rapid change, and actually we've seen it rapidly, rapidly changing with the kinds of birds that are coming through our facility. We've mm-hmm. seen this rapidly changing just in the last 5 years even. We got snowy owls, 5 of them last year, coming in starved. We don't get snowy owls. We're in the South Okanagan, right?
Oh, okay.
It's very unusual for us to get snowy owls. We got 5 this year.
Wow.
So they're moving south, right, because their mm-hmm. habitat's being encroached upon and climate is changing. So long story short, I fell in love with the whole process. I just fell in love with taking care of these birds and just being so momentary with it so that they didn't get too used to me. Like, I felt in love with the fact that they didn't want me there, you know, mm-hmm. that it wasn't a cuddly situation. I fell in love with the fact that they were wildlife, that it was a privilege to have a moment with them.
Sure.
But it should only be a moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
and our mandate is always to release the birds, always, 100% of the time. If
right.
we can let them go, we will let them go, unless they are too far gone, injured, unless they're not able to be. But our mandate is to release them, rehab and release. Just in case anybody wants more information on our facility, it's www.sorco.org. We also accept donations. Sorry, that was a plug.
No problem. Fine, that's perfect.
But we do some great work at that facility. And I, this summer, became part of the board.
Cool.
So now I'm the educational director at Sorco. And so basically my position is to educate the world about injured raptors or orphaned raptors that come through our facility, and also about the conservation that we're promoting. And so it's exciting work. It's very keeps me really connected to the landscape of my land here. And
nice.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Well, I know that you know, man is just, you know, is just taking over everything. You know, expansion. Here in Columbus, it's the same way, too. I mean, everything just keeps growing and growing and just pushing and pushing. And that's kind of where I've been kind of working on this new, I don't know, you probably heard a little bit about a book I'm writing about the urban setting and the suburban setting about shamanism, how, you know, there's a call for more people to do this work. And I know there's people there. I'm trying to connect people with people who do this type of work. That's probably my biggest thing, so they can learn and understand. I have run into people constantly. They say, "Well, I hear this, I hear that. I have these messages that come to me to do this, to hug a tree, la la la," and the story goes on and on. And so, you know, this urban suburban shaman is understanding that shamanism is also changing too. You know,
and I think that was always kind of the impetus. You know, I think that's why it's been kept in the underground for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the underground necessarily so, because due to colonization, it just wasn't allowed.
Mm-hmm.
It was wiped out, you know. In this stepping forward, my work is called the Alchemist Path, because
mm-hmm.
it's not called the Anointed Path, because
mm-hmm.
What an alchemist is a person who is taking the raw materials of their life and moving forward, and raising that energy up. So extracting the preciousness from the raw materials. And the premise is, and this is, as I've discovered, quite an unpopular point of view, is that not everybody needs to be just chosen to do the work.
Right.
You know, like an anointed, like you shall be.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
I feel like everybody has this propensity, if they want to show up and do the work, if they want mm-hmm. to show up to themselves, if you want to do it, do it. Because who says that you aren't the one? You know, who's to say
right.
that you aren't the one to do the work? And the world over, wherever I go, this is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing this, that people are showing up to do the work, and they're not afraid. And they might not know exactly how to do it. They might not know exactly why at the deepest levels, but they know that they need to do it. Something inside
right.
of them.
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely.
So I really feel... and as I say, this is, like I said, it's kind of an unpopular point of view, because I don't know if you know this. I have a Facebook group called the Shamanic Community. It's actually the biggest shamanic group on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while we have a topic. Somebody posts a topic that sort of discusses how shamans come about. How, you know, are people chosen? Are people... Do people emerge? And it usually sparks really fierce debate, really fierce. Some people are very protective about the concept of that, you know, it's a chosen path. And I think it was, very much so. I think there was a reason for that, you know, but we don't live really like that in the Western part of the world. And a lot of the Eastern part of the world doesn't live like that anymore,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so what has to emerge from that is that we evolve. It has to, and it gets lost. It has to, and I also feel like maybe it was meant to be that way. Maybe it was meant to be that everybody awakens this part of themselves that is a self-healer, that is aware of that, that decides their own journey. You know, you decide, you choose, and I feel like that isn't just for one person. It isn't just for one person in a village. And my deepest hope is that I never have to teach anybody anything, that this emerges and everybody finds out about themselves and wakes up to themselves, and they don't need to take the courses and the workshops. They just wake up to themselves and they start doing the work. You know,
absolutely.
I'm hoping for my own obscurity in this work. I'm hoping for it. I'm hoping I don't have to do any more soul retrieval at some point in my lifetime. I'm hoping for my own obscurity. When people don't come back to see me for a while, that
mm-hmm.
is actually a good thing.
Yep, I know. That's what. Now I know why you and I get along, why I feel connection to you, because I feel the same exact way when I do my work. You know, I want people, you know, fine, come, 2, 3, then after that I don't want to see you.
Yeah, I want you to be doing your own work. Yeah.
You got to work on yourself. You know, I agree with you on that one, man.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Doesn't make me a very good businesswoman, but it makes me an. I think it makes me a good medicine woman.
Sure,
but,
absolutely.
Because
you know, you said it. You know, all healing is self-healing. I mean, you have to take the first steps to want to heal, first steps to you know change your life and you know, and reach. Once you start, I think once your energy starts to shift to that, you start attracting the energies that you know you need. The people you need, and I agree with you. You know, at one time there was an anointing. It was a way of life. It was you know, in some cultures it was kind of strange to be the anointed one or to be chosen to do that. You know, it's kind of weird. You know, to be isolated. But now I believe it's a different time. You know, we're having a different trials and different you know things that we need people who they're having the calling, and I hear it every day. And, you know, and I honor and respect other people's beliefs as well. And I know not everybody honors and respects my beliefs. That's okay. And I understand that.
So okay.
And I get that, you know. No problem. But I will always honor yours, regardless if you don't mind. Because I learn it's about me, and it's about where I need to be and where I have to be centered. And, you know, and understanding that the work that I'm doing is valuable and important. And, you know, I when you said that, I was just like, bing, ding. I heard that before. I tell myself all the time. That's
we have
awesome.
To model it, right? Like, we have to model what we... You got to be it. You got to be the work.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not even good enough to just talk about it, you know, to just share it that way, at that level. Like, to walk around and say everyone needs to heal themselves is... It's almost crazy talk, right? Like, who am I to say that?
Yeah.
For me, it's like, it's always about my own work. And I always tell people in the trainings, you know, my main goal is not even to teach people how to do healing. It's really to create these homeopathic people that create healing just by walking through the world.
Absolutely.
From that ripple effect, you know. And I've seen that happen. I've seen it. I've seen people. I've been in the presence of people like that, you know, that are the homeopathic.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I hugged Amma, I was crying so hard, and it was so funny because who knew where those tears came from? Like,
sure.
Amma is the hugging guru, the hugging saint, as they call her, and it's so funny because she's so unpretentious. She just stands there. She holds you, and then she kisses you, and it's like the ripple effect. You feel all of this stuff shed off of you, just gone, all of this other stuff. And to me, that is the nature of the work. That's where it will go. Instead of us doing all this stuff, we just become it. We just become it, and we live it, and we walk it, and we talk
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely, because I totally get you. I had some new friends, you know, who I've met, and they want to learn the path. They want to walk this path, and it's about walking in, you know, with somebody and guiding them, and them, because you're learning from them as much as they're learning from you. And they ask me, what's your title? What should we call you? And I, you know, is shaman okay? I'm saying, just call me Iggy, you know. I mean, Iggy's fine. I mean, you can call me whatever you want, but my name is Iggy, so we'll just leave it at that. It was just funny. I got a chuckle out of it, but...
I've got a bunch of different names, and I honestly don't care which one gets thrown
I'm
out there. But but I always say, and I wrote it on my website, because I really woke up to this, like, I wouldn't say that recently. It's sort of been a common theme, but really the words came to me. Is that people seek to be special because a lot of times they don't know their own identity, you know? They don't know who they are. Like, I didn't know who I was, so I was always trying to be special, you know? And special is so hard to maintain. It takes so much energy to be special.
Right.
You got to wrap everything up in being special. And it's all involved in what other people think of you. You know, really, other people have to find you special or you're not special, right? Because that's what special is. And what I found is that I'd rather be completely ordinary. I'd rather be utterly mundane. I'd rather be like this tree I'm looking at across from my house. You know, I'd rather be a waterfall. I'd rather be my garden. You know, utterly mundane. You pass by them every day. Utterly mundane. But there's magic there.
Absolutely.
You know? And that's where the magic really is. People are looking for fireworks in life. They want something revelatory to happen. And they walk by them every day. They walk by a tree every day. They walk by a flower every day. You want something to be magic? Notice that. Because that's where it is, in the ordinary. And so I would much rather just be ordinary. I'd rather just be Dawn. I'd rather just be a woman on the phone with Iggy right now.
Yeah, that's the way I'm looking at it. I'm just, you know, when I'm called to do the work, then that's fine, you know, but just call me Iggy. I'm happy with that.
Although, you know, it's interesting to be called shaman. Like, I have people who do call me that. And I don't go walking around like the word police, you know, busting people.
Yeah, I don't.
If they ask me what I want to be called, I'll, you know, talk about it. But people call me that all the time. And I realize when I call my teacher that. Like, I call my teacher a shaman, but he would never call himself that, you know?
Yeah.
Or teachers, rather, now. But they would never call themselves that because it's irrelevant, you know?
Yep.
It's just irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's such an irrelevant point, you know, that I'm just a person. I'm coming here to serve. It's such an obedient path that basically I need to just show up and do what needs to be done and say yes to it. You know, instead of going, I am shaman, so therefore.
Yeah. Well, you know, we live in a world.
I shall be awesome.
Right. So, you know, we live in a world of where we're, you know, a lot of us come from different backgrounds and religions, where you know there's a priest or a rabbi or you know, or some type of guru or something, you know, where you know out of respect they would say father, you know, or sister. So I get that. I understand. So people are trying to associate, you know, what you do with, you know, the person with what the work is. But you're a chef.
It's just a term of respect. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got to call you chef because you're cooking in the kitchen. You know, like when I work in the restaurant, you know, people call me chef. I'm just cooking. I'm the bartender, but I get it. I understand. And you know, and that's one of my tools that I try to educate people with too, to understand, you know, we're all in this together, you know. Everybody brings something to the table that's magical. I mean, I bring what I bring, you bring what you bring. We just got to figure out what it is for you. Sometimes it's right in front of us and we don't even see it because, you know, we're too busy trying to find it that we're overlooking it. It's kind of like that tree you keep walking by. It's been trying to talk to you and asking you to hug it for I don't know how many years now. But it's just little things like that, you know. I mean, it took me a while, personally, and I'll be honest with you, you know, years ago, to kind of get that and figure that out, you know, that everything, that I'm part of everything, that, you know, all my relations, that everything has its purpose on this planet, and we're part of that purpose, and that purpose to be one with it and understand it. My life is, I'm not a rich man by any means, but I'm rich in different ways, you know, and understanding, you know, that there are things that support me, you know, this planet, this road, the trees, the air. And, you know, I'm very grateful for that. And I give thanks to that every day because without that, I would be a different type of existence. But at this point, you know, where I'm at, I'm grateful for, you know, the things that go unseen. And I think that's part of my medicine is to honor the things that go unseen and to, you know, recognize it. And,
it's so true, and the things that go unseen really, you know, it's interesting to be doing what we do because, you know, oftentimes people are, you know, I wouldn't say disrespect, but don't understand what shamanic practice really is because it involves working with the unseen forces, you know, and because unseen forces are unseen, at sort of a regular intensity of attention. But we also have so many ways of numbing out our senses that a lot of, we've obscured even our own senses. So when you talk about walking past a tree, it may not occur to somebody that the tree is calling to them because their senses have been so dulled by things like television or like food that's not nutritious or, you know, the air that might be, you know, full of pollution or water that may be full of chlorine. You know, I'm not trying to be like
no, I totally get what you're
about
saying.
These things, right? But, you know, we've had our senses dulled. So to come into releasing ourselves from that, from the shackles of having dulled senses and to come into the reality of, what is real, the greater sense of what's real. I mean, I'm actually a realist, you know? Like, I'm a realist. I'm not, people think of this as such an esoteric thing, and it is, but it's also about realism. Because how can we actually even observe realism if we're so distracted? We can't even see what's in front of us. You know, we project so much of our own stories and our past and our fears and our, you know, our emotional fallout onto the world, and it's, we don't actually even observe it, you know, in its reality.
No, you're right.
So, you know, we miss the magic, but we also miss the reality. And so, to me, shamanism is a very realistic practice. It helps us to observe reality as it is.
Right, right.
And then we can love it because, you know, that's all that is there, is what is.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to learn to live in the moment. You know, I had some incidents in the past that I had to put me there. And I understand that, you know, right now what we have is very valuable, very important. And there's a lot of things that are going on around the world, but, you know, to be real, this is very an important moment in my time, in my life, you know, a memory that I'll always hold. And that's kind of where we store everything, into the memory bank of our minds, in our heart, in our soul, and then we use those tools again. And we keep pulling the same tools out. And I think that's, you know, learning that I have to add new tools and new memories and new things to draw from, because a lot of the old stuff doesn't serve me today. I mean, it serves me to an extent, but not like it used to. You know, I used to, you know, use it as a crutch. Now I don't have to use it as a crutch. I know that I can, you know, experience life much differently than the way I was raised or taught, or, you know, or influenced by other people. So the experiences I choose, you know, today are much different than the experience I chose 4 years ago when I was talking with you. They're completely different, you know, but there are some things that are similar, and from there I draw. So moment, being in the moment for me is very valuable, and, you know, it puts me into that state of mind to appreciate
the
things that are around
me. It's really where the gold is in this moment, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we miss it. We just forget to pick it up when we don't really look at it, you know?
Yeah.
I think about who I am. 4 years ago, when I was talking to you, that's who I was then. Completely whole person, you know, completely whole. But did I know I was whole? Was I still lacking in my own mind? Was I still lacking in my emotions? Was I still making up stories about reality, you know, instead of living it?
Yeah.
And sure I was, you know. Sure
it's
I was.
It's hard to say. I'm sure I was right along with you there, doing whatever I was doing.
You know that, I always say your miracle is in this moment, right? Your miracle is in this moment, and you shouldn't wait for it. Don't wait for it. It's here. It's right here.
Absolutely.
And everything that you look at, if you really live in that truth. I mean, I can't remember who said this, and I'm going to say Einstein, but, you know, I hate to quote people and then mess that quote up, because I think Einstein's been misquoted a bunch of times, but I think he was the one who said, there are two ways to live. You can either live as though nothing is a miracle or like everything's a miracle. And to me, like, everything's a miracle. Like, this thing, you know, when I look around, I can look at, you know, this room I'm sitting in and look at all the things I need to put away. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes about task. Or I can look at this room and see this marvelous adventure that I can see lined out and, you know, in the floor and in the things that I picked up and put down. And in this room that is holding all this memory, you know, I can see that. And I can sit in here and feel marvelous that I'm talking to you, a dear friend who's out there in the world doing such amazing work. You know, I can hold that too, or I can be thinking about dinner and lose all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're far away too, which is cool. You sound like you're like right next door.
I know, right? Like,
that's
feel like
so
I
cool.
could. We just put the phone down and open the back door and have a tea.
Here we are.
But yeah, I'm in BC and you're in
Columbus, Ohio.
Ohio, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Far, far, far away. No.
far, far away over some mountains and rivers and lakes. Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, the work that we do now is very accessible, so we can connect quick.
It's so true. It's funny because I'm also like, I'm really in love with the technology that's been able to bring a lot of this work to the, like, to everybody, you know, to each, even just like freely on their desk, you know, mm-hmm. in any moment. And then there's the part of me that just really is like, I love the community aspect of being a human being. I love to bring people together in real time. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, somebody asked me how I feel about flying all over the world to do these things. You know, do I feel like I'm polluting the planet? Do I feel like do I actually need to be doing those things? And I've said so many times, well, you know, my goal is to be completely obsolete in this work at some point. You know, that everybody can do for themselves what it is that they need to do. When I go to Bosnia, I know there's nobody really doing this work there, you know. Mm-hmm. So when I bring this work there, I know that they've flown me in because they want to learn it. Eventually, I don't want to be flown there anymore. But but the gathering together, like we could do all of this technical stuff online. I could teach everything through Skype, you know,
sure.
if I wanted to. But the truth is, being in person, it catalyzes something so much deeper in people. Like, I've just witnessed in not just in Bosnia, but in the groups that I gather with, people are so, need this connection. They need each other. And for some reason, we've been taught that we don't need each other, you know, in U.S. and Canada. We're supposed to be really self-sufficient, right? Like, we're supposed to look after our own finances and our own families and our own kids. And this is what they teach us at school. Like, what, can't you raise your own kids? Like, what's wrong with you? Can't you, you know? Like, can't you manage your children? We go to restaurants. Can't you manage your children? You know, get on a plane. Can't you make that child be quiet? And honestly, it's like, I feel like we're in this plane together and we're all together. You know, we're in this precarious moment, actually, flying over the ocean. Mm-hmm. If we all died here right now, not like I wish for that, but you know, if this went into the ocean, we're a community mm-hmm. right now crashing into the ocean.
That is correct.
You know, and we would have missed this opportunity. And everybody wants to be so insular in those moments. Mm-hmm. And so protected. And I feel like, wow, what an opportunity, you know, that we're here for 9 hours together, flying over an ocean. You know, like it's kind of surreal, isn't it? When you really think about it, we're all together. We're flying over time zones, over massive amounts of water and land, and it's time travel, and we're all together doing it. But to be in a gathering, to be together, the opportunity is so ripe, you know, for us to remember that this is why we're here, in relationship with each other. We're in relationship with each other.
Yeah.
You know, we're in relationship with this earth. We're in relationship with this environment. We're in relationship, and it's magic. And it's so about love.
Absolutely.
Like, it's so about, I mean, I know it's been said so many times, it's almost cliche. People say, you know, it's all about love. It's all good. It's all about love. But I mean that. I mean it when I say that. I feel that through my feet, and I feel it everywhere I go. It's about love, you know? It's about my mysterious relationship with it, with love. How do I feel about that? You know? How do I feel mm-hmm. about it? Is there a part of me that's resisting it? Is there a part of me that isn't sure? Is there a part of me that still feels like I can't be vulnerable? You know?
Right.
And in myself, that's the ongoing meditation. It's like a question inside of myself. Where am I sensitive here? Does this feel like I need to put on a cape to hide? Can I be present here? You know? And for me, that's a huge triumph. Like, as a personal triumph, that's my hugest triumph, because all I ever wanted to do was hide for the longest time, you know? So bringing it back to myself, you know, my own accomplishment of my own ability to love openly is, I just got to shake my head and go, I can't believe that happened.
Yeah.
Because I was so afraid. And I feel like to be genuine in this world, you learn to be more loving. You know, it doesn't mean you don't learn to say no. I mean, mm-hmm. I say no a lot.
Sure.
And sometimes the most loving answer is no.
That is correct.
But I really feel like, you know, the opportunity to love is really sprung forward from that place, from that journey through so much pain and suffering. And what's emerged is this compassionate person. And
beautiful.
I feel like if I could do it, and I think I was a lost cause, I feel like if I could do it, anybody can do it.
All right. With that statement, what would you like to close with our listeners here?
I always feel the need to urge people to, wherever they are during the day, to remember to go outside. To remember to go outside, and it doesn't matter how long. This isn't a prescription. You could do it for a minute or like half an hour, like 3 or 4 hours. Just go outside and just notice. Notice what that feels like. Notice the ground underneath your feet and the air that you're breathing. And noticing that you're not even really breathing it yourself, that it's something is actually breathing through you. And in that moment, realize how you're connected, that you are this grand receptor site for all the energy that's moving through this universe, this grand receptor site for this organism we call Pachamama.
Absolutely.
And to know that you're not alone in that, that we're all in that effort, we're all in that work.
Awesome.
And in that beingness. So I think that's what I'd like to close with.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for spending some time with me here on the show. It's been an awesome honor and deep bow. I really appreciate you coming on, taking time out of your busy schedule.
You know, well, you know I love you, Iggy.
I love you too.
Love you from BC, Canada, and big hugs to you and your family from here. And thank you. It was an honor to be part of your show today.
And say hi to Rudy for me. I guess he's the wonder dog, right?
Yes, she's the wonder dog.
All right.
I've met her.
All right, cool.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much, and I'll talk to you soon, and I'll send you a message there on Facebook. Thank you for this time and space.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Iggy. Take care.
Take care, my sister. Bye-bye. There you go, folks. I want to thank Dawn Dancing Otter for being on our show. Her website is actually www.dancingotter.ca. I believe that's a short link for her site. And again, that's dancingotter.ca. Okay, so for those of you who want to visit her, beautiful. I mean, just amazing. Pretty awesome. I'm going to go to a little commercial break and we'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is your host, Jenny Seek, for Inner Voice Intuitive Hour. You might have just thought I wore one hat, but no. If you're looking for something meaningful and spiritual for the holidays, for yourself or for a special someone, check out Sacred Bracelets Intuitive Designs on Facebook and at my website at sacredbracelets.com. Find something meaningful and special for the special ones in your life. Back to the show.
Hey, Jenny, I heard you have a new sponsor on your show.
Yeah, I'm so excited. John Addison of Holistic Highways to Wisdom, who's an amazing, amazing video maker, and he creates videos for people who are in the metaphysical and spiritual community to promote their services and get their energy and their message out there.
Yeah, I know John very well. He's done videos for me as well.
Awesome. I know he's a great asset to our community. Anyway, if you want to check out John as a practitioner, or if you'd like to check out his wonderful series of metaphysical videos, just pop on over to holistichighwaystowisdom.com. Back to the show.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com and WithInsights.com, your free online holistic publication resource magazine for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. Please feel free to explore our daily inspirational quotes and uplifting stories, exclusive interviews with local world-known inspirational leaders. You're listening to With Insights Radio. .com with Iggy Garcia. I want to thank everybody who was on the show tonight. Don Dancing Otter, we want to thank you for being our guest. For those of you who want to see her, meet her, she's online at dancingotter.ca. And she's also on Facebook, so that's how to do a little search for Dancing Otter. She talked to us and took us on her path and showed us, you know, her medicine and who she was in a nutshell. Very small nutshell. She's a beautiful practitioner, beautiful person, a beautiful human. I'm glad to be on this planet with her, knowing that there's other people like her out there and sharing their medicine with everybody. So I want to welcome everybody to come back next week, listen to our show. If you want to find me, I'm on Facebook, / Iggy Garcia, or you can go to my website, iggygarcia.com. Send me an email, talk to me. Get in touch with me about different things that you want to connect with. So there's not a whole lot more to talk about tonight. I think the show was an amazing time. It was beautiful. I really enjoyed the message that our friend had to share, and just the different, you know, the energy she brings to this world. So with that, in closing, I want to say good night. I want to say everybody have a nice week. Enjoy the rest of your week. It's beautiful out there. Look for the magic. Look for the miracles. The miracles are right in front of us. That was kind of the message that Don left with us. The miracles, we sometimes walk past them. So, you know, like Einstein, she quoted Einstein, you can wait for miracles to happen or you can make miracles happen all the time. I think I misquoted that too, but that's okay. That's how it works. Sometimes new quotations come out of things. So with that, I'll talk to you guys later. Bye. That's great.